You're listening to Radically Pragmatic, a podcast from the Progressive Policy Institute. We talk with lawmakers, policy experts, and thought leaders about the issues driving the news nationally and internationally. The Progressive Policy Institute is a catalyst for policy innovation and political reform with offices in Washington, D.C. and Brussels. Its mission is to create radically pragmatic ideas for moving America beyond ideological and partisan deadlock. We encourage analytical conversations, not your typical partisan talking points.
Welcome back to the next edition of the Rob's Reports podcast. I am Curtis Valentine, director of the Reinventing America Schools Project at the Progressive Policy Institute, and I am here in New Orleans at the Essence Fest. We're here for our latest series we're calling The Future is Woman, and I am highlighting and sitting down with amazing Black women in education who are changing the game, and some of the most dynamic Black women in education. And this episode, I have, some would say, maybe the most dynamic or one of the most dynamic women in education who changing the game every day through the work she's doing. And the work she's doing, particularly with her latest venture, is so timely. And in some cases, maybe was before its time in many ways. And so I have the amazing Dr. Kaya Henderson. So welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are here in New Orleans. So far, how has Essence Fest been to you?
Essence Fest has been fantastic. Okay. Oh my God.
Okay.
It is all the things. Amazing people. I went to the concert last night. Great acts. Mm-hmm. Lots of free stuff. I'm going to have to check my bag when I go home.
Okay.
A bunch of free stuff.
All right.
It's been great. It has been absolutely fantastic.
And today's your birthday. The day we're recording is your birthday.
Mm-hmm. You got me out here working on my birthday.
And see, you know what? I'm here talking about, you know, Black women, Essence Fest, get your rest and relaxation on, and you work on your birthday. I apologize.
Not at all.
But it's also a testament to who you are and what this work means to you.
No, it's a testament to you and the work that you do, because I wouldn't do this for everybody.
So see, she started off early with the flattery. Oh, you see how that worked out? You see how she did that? She is not new to this. She is true to this. And so I'm so excited to be here. So for those who don't know, tell us about the work you're doing now. Many folks knew about you through your work as Chancellor of the DC Public Schools in another capacity, where I teach at the University of Maryland, College Park. We actually did a whole class on you, in a case on what you were able to do in your tenure, and we'll talk about that in a whole other conversation. Maybe you could come talk to my class next semester. But what you're doing right now, and more importantly, what about what you're doing right now most excites you?
So right now, I am leading a company. I started a company 3 years ago called Reconstruction, and we teach African-American history and culture online to young people. And it has been a long-held sort of thought of mine that if Jewish kids go to Hebrew school to learn about their history and their culture, and Korean kids go to Korean school, and Sikh kids go to Sikh camp, mm-hmm. then where's Black people's school? Where do we teach our children our history and our culture? Because there's no way that we can rely on the public schools to teach our kids who they are. This is not a system that was designed for us. I mean, I ran the system, and so I know this better than most people. But I also know that when we infused culturally relevant content into the curriculum, when our young people saw themselves and their communities and what they were learning, when we asked them to solve problems that were related to what they were living, that academics soared, that leadership soared, that confidence soared, and I wanted to be intentional about helping to build strong Black children so that, as Frederick Douglass said, we don't have to repair broken men.
Mm-hmm. And so what about this work excites you right now?
I think there are two things that excite me. One, I get to do whatever I want to do, however I want to do
Amen
it.
Amen to that.
I can decide that kids need to learn how to play spades and create a class that teaches kids how to play spades. Mm-hmm. I can decide that kids need to learn Black Shakespeare and create a class around Black Shakespeare. I get to do whatever I want to do, how I want to do it, totally without any barriers. And that is super exciting for me. And then the other thing that's exciting is watching the response of young people to this content. Like, it is wild to see kids engaging. We've been running, yesterday was the last day of a summer program that we've been running in Jackson, Mississippi for 1,000 kids this summer. And I wish you could see the videos and the pictures. Yo, these kids are about it. Like, they are all into it. And, you know, people say that education is not, we don't value education as a community. That's trash. We've been educating ourselves since it was dangerous to do so.
Absolutely.
And we have had citizenship schools and freedom schools and Marva Collins, Westside Prep on, you know, in her apartment in Chicago. Like, we have this tradition of educating ourselves. And when we do, our kids learn and grow. And I'm seeing that in spades, frankly.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And reclaiming that and telling that story. And in many cases, I often talk about post-emancipation, Black folks were leading, leading even those who were enslavers around the importance of literacy.
Yes.
And numeracy.
Yes.
And education and building schools. And when the Freedmen's Bureau came south and they thought they were going to, you know, create schools, they came to the community and schools were already created.
This is why we named our company Reconstruction. Reconstruction, the Reconstruction period of American history, is the least taught era in American history. And the reason is because Black people were winning.
Yeah.
It was 12 years, just 12
years,
post-emancipation, where in those 12 years, we created 37 historically Black colleges and universities and 5,000 community schools across this country. And they tell us that we don't value education. The first thing we did when we got free was create schools.
Yep.
We owned 24% of the farmland in America. We weren't sharecropping. We owned our own land. And they tell us that we don't value, we are not good stewards. There were 500,000 Black men who voted in a presidential election, and Ulysses S. Grant only won by 300,000 votes. So they tell us our vote doesn't count. Our vote has always counted. We incorporated towns. We created banks and insurance companies and businesses. Listen, we were rocking with ourselves and doing it by ourselves. And the people looked around and were like, wait a minute.
Oh, heck no.
That's not how this is
going. Oh, no. Hold on. Hold on now.
No.
I mean, the South Carolina legislature was majority Black.
We sent our first representatives to the United States Senate, hiring rebels. Like, we were doing all the things, and we literally had just gotten out of slavery. And people said no, and so we forced people to confront this era of history by calling ourselves Reconstruction. We also want people to understand that we are trying to reconstruct the Black community. We're trying to reconstruct Black families. We're trying to reconstruct ourselves, and that's what we do.
No, this is why. So, I mean, I'm a student of Black history, but also of my own family history. And we can talk about offline all the research I've done on my ancestors who were in education. Mm-hmm. One going back to the 1700s. We can go in a guy named John Chavis, who was educating white students, a Black man, who taught white students 1803, 1804, 1805. One of his former students went on to become a white U.S. senator in North Carolina in the early 1800s.
Wow.
But again, the question is, if we knew that, how we would move.
We would show up differently.
We show up differently. But those who don't want to show up that way know exactly what they're doing.
This is why Mr. DeSantis doesn't want the AP African-American history
course taught, right? Yeah.
This is, the people are afraid. They have been absolutely right to withhold education from us, because when we get this,
they done messed up. They know they messed up. Yeah. So you see the vibe already for the pod. You see where we going. But again, we're at Essence, and so I want you to talk about and lean in on sort of the work that you do at Reconstruction, and how it centers the experience of Black women, whether it be in what you're teaching, who's teaching it. Who's leading your organization. Talk more about, again, Reconstruction, but also how the work that you're doing centers experience voices of Black women.
It's very interesting that my co-founder is an economics professor from Harvard named Roland Fryer. And Roland...
Shout out to Roland Fryer. I know Roland's the homie. Yeah.
Roland is brilliant, MacArthur Genius Award winner, all the things, and has been a true thought partner. And there are a group of black women who run this organization with me. Kenya Bradshaw, who is an absolutely extraordinary leader who came out of organizing, community organizing for our people, who is the president of my organization. Rochelle Etienne, who is my vice president for curriculum, who has a vision for what our, I mean, I literally, Curtis, just say, here's what I think our kids can learn, and these broads take it and run with it. And, I mean, you know, so many, Erin Mounticure, I just have awesome black women, Heather Williams, I just have amazing, most of the people who work in my company are black women. We have 470 reconstructors who work for us. Mm-hmm. These are tutors, the people who teach the class. The vast majority of them are black women. Like, this is, we just ooze black femininity in this thing. And we are careful about representation in our classes. We're intentional about lifting up black girls. We have a whole book club series that is just for black girls to help them think about who they are and see themselves differently. It's all a whole bunch of black girl magic running around Reconstruction. And I think we're stronger for it. You know that when black women show up, things get done.
That's so important. I mean, and the thing about it is, and again, you all been doing it, I guess, since we've mentioned it, since we, you know, since we got to this country, since we, you know, 10 toes on this land. But to see the work that you're doing, both representing and talking about the past, but also the present and the future.
Yes.
So incredibly important. I mean, Essence Fest in many ways is all of that and more. And so why are gatherings like Essence Fest, important to you in your work?
I mean, when you walk around the streets of New Orleans this weekend, you can't help but feel anything but proud to be black. Mm-hmm. You see us in all of our dimensions, child, the fashion, the food, the music, the culture, like all the things. I was in the Superdome last night. Like, it is full. I've been to Superdome a bunch of times, right? But I may be only one other time. The last time I came to Essence is the only time that I have been in the blackest black. Oh, I don't know how many people that thing holds, but there was a whole lot of black people in there last
year. Yeah.
And it just warms my heart when we come. This is why people love Martha's Vineyard. This is why people love
Black Spaces.
The gathering together when we can be our whole selves is unlike anything else in the world.
Yeah.
And so I think Essence is important because it calls us home. It's the family reunion. It's the family reunion. Mm-hmm. It calls us home. It calls us into community. It reminds us of how amazing we are. I mean, you get to see everywhere you turn, there is black excellence. There's also black struggle, right? New Orleans is a complicated city.
Say that.
It's the murder capital of the world right now. Our people are struggling. And so we have to hold on to both of those narratives. We have to be the leaders that our community needs for us, and we need to exemplify excellence and resilience, and those two things are always who we have been.
Yeah.
And so coming together in these spaces reminds us to do that.
Shout out to release, shout out to peace and taking time and taking space.
Yeah.
I think all the things that particularly black women do, you all do like sort of in spite of not having the rest. And so we see, I think about my mom and my aunties, and we see what you all do. And oftentimes it's not necessarily as well communicated to us about all the things that you're dealing with or putting down or sacrificing. And so we're saying, well, you can do, well, you all make it look easy, so it must be easy, right?
Honey.
Or, you know, my mom would always say, you know, if you want something, unfortunately or fortunately, if you want something done, right, do it, give it to a busy person, or, you know, you want something right, give it to a black woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, So when are you putting something down?
Yeah.
In essence, and you know, shout out to Martha's Vineyard, Oak Bluff community, and other spaces like that, HBCU homecomings, whatever that space is for you, to be able to reconnect, to commune with others, and to put that down, if only for a few days.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are post-pandemic. we're talking a lot about mental health, but there's a revolution going on in Black girl world, and it's around rest, right? Trisha Hersey and Rest as Resistance, or Octavia Rahim with Pause, Rest, Be. There is a conversation that is happening in the Black girl community about the fact that, you know, doing all of this stuff is killing us. And in fact, we deserve rest, and we deserve peace, and we deserve calm, and we deserve joy. And I see Black women reclaiming that. I see Black women putting things down in ways that I've never seen before. If I go to one more conference or event where people say no is a full sentence, right? We're talking about boundaries.
Yeah.
Saying no to things, and that's new for us.
Yeah.
And the youngs, let me tell you, the youngs are not having it.
Oh, no.
The youngs
no.
are they, like, no thank you. Yeah. I'm not doing it. I'm not coming in. I don't feel good. When I do, I'll see you then.
Yeah.
And I think it is teaching us all to reclaim our power over our own lives.
Yeah, and shout out to the young folks teaching us.
Yes.
And us being teachable.
Absolutely.
That's incredibly important. If you're like me, you know, I have, you know, a stack of Essence magazines in the house somewhere. So I'm reading Essence. And again, from the space that I occupy in education, how can I say this? I could use some more stories about Black women in education in K-12, in essence, just, you know, as an aside. And so when I come here as well, my second year coming, and I'm thinking about sort of, you know, how could Essence Magazine, how could Essence Fest tell stories about what you're doing, about your reconstructors, about your program, you know, the programs you're doing, your partners you're making. How do you think Essence Magazine, Essence Fest can do a better job of telling the stories of Black women, particularly in the K-12 education space?
It's so interesting, Curtis, because everybody loves teachers. Everybody can tell you about the Black teacher that they had that changed their lives and whatnot. Yet and still, the media does not cover education unless it's a doom and gloom story.
Mm-hmm.
We want to hear about, you know, the NAEP scores and how 13-year-olds are doing worse than they've ever done in decades. All of that is true. And every day, there are amazing Black people, educators, not just women, men, all of us out here killing it for kids. And if I had a dollar for every time somebody told me in the media, education's not a winning story. It just... education doesn't sell. When I was chancellor of DC public schools, if things were bad in DC public schools, the Washington Post would cover it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
If things were good, I could not get an article. And so we use social media to show people, to control our own narrative and to help people understand that things were better. And I mean, our hashtag was DCPS Rising to help people understand that we were on an upward trajectory because the media doesn't want to cover it. And I think it's particularly important, you know, I don't know how you cover the Delta Sigma Theta convention and not look out in that room and see that most of those women are educators. I don't know how you cover the AKA convention. I don't understand how you cover any Black women's thing and not understand that there is a critical mass of educators in that space. And so I think it is incumbent upon Essence and any Black publications to lift up, you know, the career that enables every other career. Thank God Quinta Brunson said, I'm going to do what I want to do anyway, because they told her that an education show wasn't going to fly. And now Abbott Elementary is one of the best shows, most watched shows on television. Shout out to Mrs. Abbott, who has a whole new career now running around the place telling about her. Her educational journey. There is evidence that people want to hear these stories. And so I think that people are, it's a sleeping giant. I think everybody has been to school. Everybody has this common experience. Everybody wants to tell us what to do. Let's have the conversation in our community about schools, about educators, about the people who are caring for our babies in this most critical time.
Yeah, I mean, Essence Magazine, I mean, because it's such a reputable, respected outlet, they have the power to shape to shape narratives in our community and outside of our community. And if they're not shaping them, narratives are being shaped whether we move. If you fall asleep and you lay down and you're like, you know what, I'm not going to. It's not important. And this is the work I operate as well. And a lot of work I do is these narratives are being shaped whether we like it or not. And if you have a platform and control and opportunity to do so in spaces like this, but do it in a way you think is still on brand, then we challenge you to do so, because you do everything else so well. And so I have no complaints about that. But there's something about this festival. So this is sort of our third on location podcast series. We're at South by Southwest, we're at ASU GSV, and now we're here at Essence. And I asked the same question to my guest. And my question is, what is this festival missing? If tomorrow you get a phone call from the editor in chief of Essence Magazine, and they're like, Kyle, we're planning for 2024. Like, what should we do differently to really center the spaces that you operate in and the women that you work with for 2024?
I mean, I think, as we just talked about, an explicit strand on education. There were a whole lot of education events here on Thursday and Friday that were for and about Black women, but they were hosted by foundations and other organizations that just tried to capitalize on the fact that lots of Black women would be here. They weren't actually affiliated with Essence Festival. You have a technology strand, you have a health strand, you have, all of these, you have all these different focus areas. And how do we not have an explicit area where we're talking about education, A, number one. I think B, number two, I won't say that I know exactly everything that is happening here, but centering the voices of young people, I think, is really important. Our young people are living a completely different experience than we lived. And as adults, we're making decisions every day that affect their lives. We have to co-create our future with our young people. And I want to see young people on the stage at Essence Fest. I want to see young people who've done amazing things featured throughout the weekend. I want to see young people on buses and on the flags that are on the light poles all over the city. We have to, if we don't put our hands around our babies.
Yeah.
The world has already put its hand around our babies, and we see the violence and we see the depression and we see all of these things. I would love for Essence to really center or have an adjacent youth-focused series, event, something. Our young people can't pay $275 to go to the concerts, right?
Yeah.
Where are the scholarships for young people so that they can touch the culture the way people are who are paying? Don't get me started.
No, and what you said is so important. So you talked about the different strands, it'll be technology, business, even other, but there's so many schools that are preparing young people for careers in healthcare management and technology. And there are women who are leading schools, starting nonprofits, who are making a way for the folks who eventually end up on the other side in these careers that Essence is highlighting to say, well, they didn't come out of nowhere.
Right.
They came out of someone's hard sweat, hard work, resources, time, energy. That they deserve that space as well. And similarly, when it comes to young people, if young people are not feeling like they're included, they will create their own. Yes. And you're seeing it. Their TikTok channel, their Instagram, their Twitter is their space, and they're making spaces whether we invite them to ours or not. And I appreciate that about our young people as well, because they're not waiting for the invitation. To Essence, like, all right, I can't afford it, I can't go, guess what, I want to do my own thing,
right?
Let's do our thing, and you all can cover it if y'all want, but if you don't, we'll make space for ourselves. So shout out to the sisters who are doing that as well, that entrepreneurship. And so I don't want to hold you, but I'm curious. I'm sure my listeners are curious on what's next for Dr. Kyra Henderson, for Reconstruction. What should we be looking forward to you next weeks, months, and years to come?
Well, at Reconstruction, I'm super excited. We have been playing around in the generative AI space, and we have created a new product that is geared towards helping teachers plan more culturally responsive lessons. Mm-hmm. And so it's called Onyx, and we are working on
my head was somewhere else. I mean, I'm from Jersey in the 90s. I'm like, Onyx, like, okay. Fredo Starr. Okay. They did a song. I listened to every 40 football game, The Last Days from Onyx. Shout out to Onyx.
So I'm excited to be in the tech space and figuring out how to use technology to help teachers teach our children better. So I'm excited about that. I have decided that I am going to retire on June 30th of 2025.
Okay.
The significance of that date is it is the day before my 55th birthday.
Okay.
And I want to be free at 55.
I
don't want
to. I see the T-shirt already. Free at 55. Trademarked it. You know.
And I just don't want to work full time anymore. Part of what I try to do in everything that I do is model a different way for people. We don't have to follow the rules. We don't have to do the things. I don't have to wait till I'm 62 or 67. Mm-hmm. I can retire early and do the things that bring me joy. I'll work, but I'll only work on things that I want to work on, and I'm not working full time. I have a home on the Caribbean island of Anguilla, which is where my people are from.
Wow.
And so
okay.
I want to spend more time there.
Say that.
I want us to know that, like, we don't have to work till we fall over. I want us to enjoy life. And so I'm trying to model that for people. So that's in the next 2 years or so.
There you go. So the 55, retirement movement has been, is here.
Yes.
So receive that. Before I let you go, I mean, I want to give you an opportunity to just shout out some Black women who don't often get shouted out. And because you do have microphones in front of you often, and most don't, shout out some Black women who are in this space that you think deserve more attention.
Let me tell you something. Nobody in the world talks about Black women superintendents. The superintendency is the hardest job that I have ever done in my life. And I killed it only because there were a group of women who I could talk to, who were thought partners, who were a shoulder to cry on, an ear to listen. And so I want to shout out people like Sonia Santelises, who's the superintendent in Baltimore. I want to shout out your girl Monica Golson, who just retired at 50 something. Come on.
Yeah, down to Prince George's County.
Listen,
shout out to the county.
I want to shout out Latanya Gothney and Aldine. I want to shout out Alicia in Indianapolis, Avis in New Orleans. I mean, these are women who are doing the thing right now. One of the most thankless jobs in the world, one of the most public jobs in the world. There are Black women who are out here crushing it for our young people. These superintendents have to deal with public pressure. They have to deal with managing large organizations, unions, politics, all of the things. And they do it every day with grace and class and style. And so I want y'all to go find the Blackest girl superintendents in your area and buy them a donut. Just say thanks.
Say thank you.
I want you to do. We salute our military, our military men and women, because we're thankful for the job that they do for our country every day. I want us to thank our superintendents, our leaders who are holding it down for kids all across this country.
Say that. No, that's amazing. It's an incredible point. Again, Dr. Golson, thank you for 37 years in education, and you deserve all the rest that you're going to get as well. Such a pleasure to sit down with you, get you here, and you've joined that small community of Black women who are known by that first name. So we got the Beyoncés, we got the Oprahs, we got the Rihannas. people just say Kaya, and they just know, oh, Kaya's coming. I'm like, Kaya is it's a common name. It's not so common, but we all know who we're talking about. When we say Kaya, oh, we got Kaya, oh, Kaya. Oh, we're going to give Kaya a war. Today's Kaya's birthday. Oh, there's only one Kaya. And so we appreciate you,
in
the first name. There are a lot of Curtises, so I'm not dare you. One day I'll get to the, Curtis Valentine. Oh, which Curtis? But thank you so much for joining me today and for... Those who are listening, thank you for joining us for this edition of the Rods Reports podcast here on location in New Orleans at Essence Fest. You have just listened to my conversation with the amazing Dr. Kaya Henderson, and follow the work of Reconstruction with the work that they're doing, and shout out the work that they're doing. And thank you all again for joining us. This podcast was done in collaboration with EdChoice. Thank you so much for them for partnering with us for this particular series. The future is woman. Thank you all so much and look forward to the next edition of this Rods Reports podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Want to learn more about the Progressive Policy Institute? Follow us on Twitter at PPI and on Facebook at Progressive Policy Institute, or go to our website at progressivepolicy.org. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and check back for new episodes. We'll talk with you soon.